Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
Hey kids, just a reminder, if you like what we do here at Shake Them Ropes, click on that link in the description, the red circle, and click the tip jar and throw us a buck or two, because we ain't doing live reads anymore, and we ain't volunteers. If you don't like what we do here, forget I said anything. Now, Shake Them Ropes, which you don't like what we do here, which is weird.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And Chris, if you had
Jeffrey.
Been if you had been watching Dynamite, would you?
I did.
Okay. We both watched Dynamite, but if you were watching Dynamite this week and you weren't a follower of Twitter, or as Elon Musk likes to call it, X.
Catchy name. It's getting more popular all the time. You're hearing people say it more and more.
Everybody still calls it Twitter.
No, I know. It's like one of the biggest branding failures in the last 20 years.
Would you know that the hottest up-and-coming star that they signed to their roster is wrestling on their Saturday night show?
I can't wait to see Mercedes Moné on their Saturday night show.
No. 5 p.m. 5 p.m. Eastern. Tony Khan getting on Twitter. Oh, by the way, we're going to have Will Ospreay versus, I think it's Lee Moriarty. It's one of the Lees. I think it's Lee Moriarty, though, in a match. You know, after he wasn't there for Dynamite, your A show. After... And it's just, it's, this is, let me put it this way, kids. I'm going to set this up this way. If you really, really love AEW to the point where you can't take certain criticisms by people, and you go online and you start yelling about it on your Reddits and your Elon Musk's Twitter and everything like that, you may want to pass on this show. Go listen to Good, Bad, the Hungy. Go listen to, you know, some 23-year-old who loved everything about this and just wants to see bangers or whatever, because we're going to be doing some deconstructing of some things today.
I have at least one rant in me about the meta angle here involving Tony Khan. So.
Okay, yeah, no, and I have stuff about certain other angles and certain other things, some of which my thunder has already been stolen by grizzled veterans in the industry already. Some isn't, but we'll get to that. I'm like, you are in a wrestling war, and you are not, by your own words, you're in a wrestling war, and you're not hyping Will Ospreay for your show on Saturday for people to tune in and watch. Sure, you don't need the tickets. You have 7,000 in the building because Copeland and Kyle O'Reilly are apparently a draw or something. Actually, Vancouver just really likes wrestling is what it is, but yeah. Oh, why not watch the lowest rated show of your week usually other than Rampage? Come on. Chris, this just drove me nuts for some reason.
Understandably so. I think these big name acquisitions have sort of fallen into the middle of the mix and don't feel like showcase pieces in the show. It doesn't feel like the plot moves through Ospreay, Okada, and Moné. Okada feels like a sidekick to the Bucks right now. and he doesn't feel like he's leading the Bucks. It kind of feels like the Bucks are leading him. Mercedes Moné is in a feud.
Mercedes Moné is doing something, but
she's
in 2019 WWE is what she's in.
She's making choices with lesser hair.
Yes.
And then we have Ospreay, who is stuck in this goofy, I don't know that Don Callis is going to stab me in the back angle.
And enjoying a very good work-life balance right now.
Right, right. After spitting in the face of the criticism that he is not one for the grind, he has been choosing to have weeks off from Dynamite on a regular basis after being the big name talent acquisition for the company here.
Yeah.
Which makes it very difficult to move story through him, though the story that they're trying to move through him is also not very good right now.
Well, they can't, and also the fact that they don't want to move story through him right now because we just crowned a new champion who's not him, and we don't want to beat that guy just yet. So we kind of have to figure out something for him to do. But anyways, we'll get to more about that. Now for some news. WWE and USA Network reached a three-month agreement to continue Raw from October through December for $25 million. That would be the period from when the USA Network deal expired until the Netflix deal kicks in. Netflix did not want it early. USA indicated not keeping the show, but the ability to get those ratings at such a price was enough for them to continue. SmackDown will also be moving from Fox to USA a few weeks early. The Fox contract expires at the end of September, but Fox was going to move several September episodes to FS1 due to college football, which is what it's replacing SmackDown with. You know, something like a big ACC rivalry between Virginia and Stanford, because all the conferences are screwed up, so who knows. But so USA agreed to debut the show on Friday, September 13th, which is a Friday. I think this is a smart move for USA to continue Raw because Netflix wants to just blow it out all at once. And $25 million is a drop in the bucket, and that ain't much for 3 months of broadcast.
No, I think USA found themselves in a very favorable position at the end of this deal, and they're going to get Raw at a quality discount as they're going out the door. I think it works good for them.
Yeah, and Fox is probably going to win gangbuster ratings on Friday with football, because football is just, it's the...
You're hearing more and more about it. It's becoming increasingly popular.
It just depends what college football they're going to play. It still boggles my mind a little bit that they didn't look at those SmackDown ratings and go, man, we could use those somewhere else.
They are really, really strong and consistent ratings that have been on an upward trajectory and still holding after WrestleMania. It strikes me as weird that Fox is seemingly so ambivalent.
Fox, which used to be the lowbrow comedy show or shows and other things,
right?
That just, oh, Married with Children is crass and stupid. Family Guy, crass and stupid. Even The Simpsons at times was considered crass and stupid. Wrestling, I don't want that crap on our network.
In particular, though, Jeff, given the fact that you now know that there's a decent chance you might have Dwayne The Rock Johnson on your television network by virtue of keeping that contract.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, The Rock draws ratings, and he was a proven ratings draw during that WrestleMania push. And if they're going to have him in the mix again, or like him, let's say The Rock and Austin, even if Austin's just doing a talking role, like that's big numbers.
I'm guessing the breaking point, though, was they wanted to keep it on Friday as opposed to moving it to a different night again. I'm thinking that might be what was WWE's insistence on that they didn't want to flood it with like Monday Raw, Tuesday NXT, Wednesday SmackDown.
No, oh. I mean, they should do it on Thursday. Thursday is a better night for them anyways, though.
I would think so, too, because people like to go out occasionally. Yeah,
right. Like, I mean, even we tape on Fridays, and so we, generally speaking, aren't talking about SmackDown unless it was really notable from the previous week.
Yeah, or unless we've gotten a chance to watch it before and we go real late. Yeah.
We tape on Saturday or something like that.
Yeah. WrestleMania 41 has officially been announced for April 19th and 20th, 2025 at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas.
Oh, hell yeah. WrestleMania 420.
Oh, it gets better, Chris. It gets way better because
hell yeah.
420 is Easter Sunday. And in the past, WWE has avoided Easter Sunday, but Las Vegas, which is paying a site fee for the show, wanted Easter because, get this, and this may come as a shock to you, Chris, because Easter weekend is a traditionally weak weekend for tourism. So a WrestleMania will be a big boost. Huh. Vegas is an interesting choice for the wrestling convention type of thing. I am going to be very fascinated to see what venues, indies, and smaller promotions, and even Ring of Honor, if they decide to run on that weekend, are going to book for that weekend. Maybe they get I don't know. I think NXT will probably get Thomas and Mack Center, or actually, something I did not read last week, but I should have. NXT is doing a PLE / big show in the UFC Apex Pyramid, whatever that place that they set up for themselves during the pandemic for fights and stuff. I think this is also a nod to their new overlords in Endeavor / TKO, because the home of the UFC is in Las Vegas. So hey, we got some cross promotion there. We can bring in the big wigs from all corporate there. Easter weekend, I think, is a no-go for a lot of families, though. And I think Las Vegas, in a way, is... I know it's gotten a little bit more kid-friendly, but this is really kind of, in some ways, going after...
It's almost like a city and 30 of something sin.
Neck beat. Oh, that one was so perfect. That one was perfect. I mean, sure, the families could sell out Excalibur or something like that, that crappy hotel. But, I mean, yeah. Hey, kids, I'm going to bring the little ones to Las Vegas. So much for the kids to do there.
I mean, there is like Circus with the roller coasters and that stuff.
Have you been to Circus?
Like when I was, it was like 25 years ago. I bet you they have not renovated the rides at all. And thus,
the kids
are getting to enjoy the same fantastic rides I got to enjoy. That's lovely.
Mommy, what are those flyers those people are handing out? Well, those are prostitutes, Johnny. Why does the MGM Grand smell like weed all the time? You know, it's just, I'm like, I get the choice. And yeah, it's a destination that, like, the 20 and 30 somethings will go wild for it, I think. Maybe. Because, you know, godless heathens abound.
I mean, also, men in that age cohort who maybe are a little sex deprived, and Las Vegas offers a chance to scratch that itch.
Prostitution not legal in that county.
Yeah. Yeah, and they don't do that in Las Vegas.
All the cheapies staying downtown in the El Cortez and whatnot are going to get a real shock as to if they've never been to Vegas. Actually, that's where the families will stay. Hey, kids, we're going to stay at the El Cortez. Go watch a crack den across the street. I get the choice, and Vegas is nice, but a whole week there? No, I'll go in for a day, maybe two. And I'm out of there if I'm a family. But at the same time, there's a lot of families that just, you know, Easter is one of those sacred times. We are going to go to church on Easter Sunday, or we're going to be a family on Easter Sunday, and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they go to relatives' house and stuff like that. I think this is a bad choice overall, but I get it from Las Vegas's perspective of bringing people in on that weekend.
Absolutely. I don't know. Las Vegas is not that far from here. It's like something I might consider doing a road trip to.
Oh, okay. Cause I'm, you know, it's close to, of course it's like 4 hours away from, Los Angeles, and I'm going for Double or Nothing already. So
yeah, it's something
that's,
I might.
That's the other interesting one is people with travel budgets for wrestling shows like to spread those things out. And now it's a little bit closer to say Double or Nothing. And I'm wondering if Double or Nothing decides to move out of Vegas and decides to come back, like they switch Revolution or not Revolution. Well, maybe even Revolution, but like Full Gear and Double or Nothing in terms of venues and stuff, because you don't want to, you want to attract more people, and they've already had to move Double or Nothing from the T-Mobile Center into MGM Grand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
A little bit of controversy this week if you are in the bubble. At the Backlash scrum after that event, French reporter Lucas Charpiot, I believe that is how he pronounces his name, he was interviewed earlier this week by Post Wrestling, both John Pollock and our friend Brandon Thurston. He was the one reporter who decided to brave asking a real question. Asked this question and got told by WWE PR, well, that was a stupid move. But it was about Drew Gulak and him being fired for sexual harassment or for harassment or whatever. Triple H's response was that no, he had not been fired, but they were going to allow his contract to expire. And that, and then he trashed both PW Insider and Fightful, who the reporter had quoted as reporting it. I don't believe one or the other had reported in that way, but he had quoted them as, you know, forwarding the story, and Triple H trashed them. So, apparently, off the record, Sean Ross Sapp and Triple H had a little bit of a phone call where WWE apologized, sent him a wheel of French cheese, which kind of, Fightful, they're co-opted media over there. The differences in the stories are interesting, too, because Fightful then later reported that Gulak was reportedly labeled as a bully and repeatedly targeted injuries of talent. When NXT said that he was recovering, repeatedly targeted injuries of talent who were recovering from minor physical issues at that time, which could be contrasted with how Brian Alvarez put on, I believe, an episode of Wrestling Observer Live this week, where he goes, look, I talked to people in NXT too, and they said no such thing about that. But there's a lot of differing stories here. Was he fired, or is his contract allowed to expire? Did that have anything to do with the last contract Gulak had, because it was a no cut contract, because he might have been negotiating around the same time as Bryan Danielson was when he signed his last contract before going over. I think we kind of know everything, to be honest with you. I think Drew Gulak's, hey, I was going for a handshake, did not fly with anybody in terms of that. But it goes to my bigger point, cancel the scrums. If you don't want to answer real or tough questions about personal things in your roster that everybody who's reading the quote-unquote dirt sheets and the news aggregators and whatnot, cancel them. Because otherwise,
this is a completely valid question. That this is a character on television. So put the news story aside, but for just a second, we'll have to reintroduce it in a moment. This is a character on television who is a faction leader. And he was mysteriously and unceremoniously written off of the show from his faction in a way where they really seemed to go out of their way to bury him as a bad person. And then to reintroduce the story with Ronda Rousey, we have that happening in the light of this. It seems to me to be extraordinarily fair game to be asking this question, and it's more surprising to me that WWE didn't have an answer ready for it.
I don't think they were expecting it on a main roster show. I think they view NXT as kind of a tertiary property, so I think they weren't expecting that. And just to finish up my point about these scrums, if you don't want reporters asking real questions, great. But what you're going to get is people who aren't reporters asking bad or fake questions, which kind of removes the entire purpose of this thing, which is access, but maybe it is the entire purpose of this thing. So you get Denise Salcedo types who want it for the content for their personal channels. And this is no offense to Denise Salcedo. I'm just using her as a prominent example, pretending to then be a reporter for purposes of then getting content for her channel. But there's nothing there but fluff. If you just want fluff, fine. Work the press conferences and work the scrums, but then they become imminently unwatchable. The strange thing is every time they do one of these scrums, be it AEW or WWE, the big headlines come from somebody trying to get some actual real information out of the company.
Yeah. I don't think the scrums have been particularly useful.
No.
Not for the company's purposes. I have no interest in watching a kayfabe scrum. Like, we wouldn't even be talking about it. I mean, that's the funny part is they've done kayfabe-y sort of scrums before, and they've done away with those because no one gives a crap about them.
Right.
So if you want to have the benefit of the attention that people, including, like, you know, secondary media like ourselves and stuff, would give a press conference because you're doing it with real humans, be ready for the thing that's the reason why we're paying attention to this press conference in the first place, which is real humans asking real questions rather than, oh boy, you know, Drew Gulak over the last several months here has had a real change in attitude. Why do you think he can't see clearly that some of this is really his own fault? And then, I mean, let Triple H answer that.
Don't have a scrum if you think you're going to get Vince McMahon questions. I mean, because you can't, well, that's an ongoing investigation. We cannot comment on blah, 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 blah. Because then people are going to keep trying to ask you stuff, and you're either going to say something you shouldn't, or you're not going to tell them anything, which is going to just piss people off.
And that, you know, PR 101, you just go, we cannot comment on that ongoing investigation. Another question, we cannot comment on that ongoing investigation.
Yes, and that becomes really fun television right there.
Right.
Slash YouTube.
Right. I mean, they'll YouTube that, or they'll YouTube supercut that, but that's way better than having escalatory responses where you're getting more and more frustrated and clearly exacerbated, yes, about it, which is what happened to Paul Levesque the first time this came up.
Yep. Speaking of problematic talent, Olympic gold medalist Gable Stevenson was let go from his WWE contract. Statement being, quote, he wasn't making the transition to pro wrestling. There had been rumors that he had had a bit of an attitude problem. He was already coming in because he had rape allegations against him from the University of Minnesota days that were later dropped. But also just bad timing for him. In terms of, like, he was playing this game of, well, maybe I'll go back to the NCAAs because I have a year left because of COVID, because COVID gave everybody 20 years worth of eligibility. And his plan was, I'm going to wear, like, a hood and a lucha mask, and I'm going to go into the NCAA tournament and reveal myself as back and win it and stuff like that. And he's, you know, he's still a top-tier talent. He's only 23, but he was cut way too late to be able to make these Paris Olympics. So he's going to have to wait 4 years as that. And also because we here at Shake Them Ropes, big fan of his brother. I'm hoping he doesn't take the brunt of any, let's say, strays from Gable Stevenson's attitude problem and inability to make the transition.
No, because his brother is an untapped gem right now. Like,
yes.
He's got a lot of personality and he's got a lot of in-ring talent.
Yeah, I mean, this might be the biggest miss they've ever had in terms of WWE going full in the old school tradition of, well, we're going to go to the NCAAs and we're going to sign this big name talent. We signed a gold medalist, which is what they thought they were getting when they signed Mark Henry, by the way. Although Mark Henry became a better wrestler, but it's one of those things where it's like, oh, we put all this money, we We showcase him on WrestleManias. We drafted. They drafted him last year, as you recall, to the main roster to Raw.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They made it a big deal. Like in that, Court Graves was going crazy over Gable Stevenson, and even like correcting Michael Cole or whoever was on the announcer because they were calling Gable Stevenson.
Yeah,
and like Graves is like, no, he's Gable Stevenson. Like, you know, he was like really, like this is a big deal, and it is not. Yeah, I'm trying to think of. Other...
I mean, the stuff you saw him in, like the Raw or the NXT Underground stuff, was decent. But yeah, it's like if you're gonna come in and say I'm an Olympian, I don't do this carny stuff. Well, see you later, kid. And apparently, NFL teams are now kind of kicking the tires on that. Hey, would you like an MMA and stuff like that? But go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm as we've been sitting here talking about this, I'm trying to think of other. Big misses that they have had in recent years in terms of athletic talents. I mean, Chad Gable only now is starting to realize some of his potential, but he definitely was a big miss for a long time.
Well, yeah, because he has no personality. We need to give him personality, and then they give him Shorty G or whatever. Who's the big guy who got fired for the bodybuilding forum stuff? He just resurfaced lately as he was complaining about some spa or something like that. He accidentally used his own phone number. They traced it back to him. The guy who had some racial stuff in his or transphobic stuff on the bodybuilding forums.
I do remember this guy. Who is that? What was that guy? The jaw. He had the big, strong jaw too.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
A little bit. That guy. That guy was another. I do feel like he was kind of a missed opportunity.
Well, they he was more of an over pushed guy. I don't think in terms of like athletic talent. I would say Casey Catanzaro in some ways is a huge miss, given how hot she was coming off of that American Ninja Warrior.
That's true. Better presentation of her, you could have actually made her seem too nimble to be caught.
Yeah.
Like you could have made her like an escape artist from submission moves and stuff.
I mean,
like
they
that.
Don't even call her Casey Catanzaro anymore on the roster. So it's one of those, she's Katana Chance. And you're just like, why did we not use all this goodwill in our way to do that type of, I mean, you could even say Ronda Rousey in some ways.
Ronda Rousey.
That was her own doing.
That was her own doing. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, the way she conducted herself while in WWE.
Pure professionalism.
Yeah, pure professionalism. No, what I'm about to say is the way she has conducted herself throughout her WWE run, kind of in the company and even kind of online and stuff during this time, is part of the reason why the first week when we were getting the Drew Gulak story there was some skepticism because Ronda Rousey has not exactly been known as a honest broker of facts all the way down the line, nor someone who always was out there giving 110%.
Jerry Lawler, 74, was not offered a broadcast contract when his deal expired a few months ago, as reported by PW Insider. Lawler had remained affiliated with the company under a Legends deal, although those are mostly $10,000 per year versus merchandise sale royalty deals. Although some Legends deals for bigger names are very lucrative for the ones who they think are important enough to not want affiliated with AEW. It was reported that the belief is Lawler would have been kept on under an announcing contract, even though there are no plans to use him going forward as an announcer after his stroke. In a slightly related and scary story, Jim Ross thinks that he and Jerry Lawler have not called their last match.
Yep. Tony Khan can get talked into that too. I believe it. I 100% believe it.
It best be like a collision in Memphis and not a pay-per-view. Sure. Bring out those two far past their prime guys. I mean, look, the other guys they brought, like David Crockett was a joy. Dave Brown was a joy. If they could dig up Bob Cottle in his 90s to call a match while he's still with us, I'm here for that because I love Bob Cottle. but I don't want to hear Bell's palsy and just age-affected Jim Ross, grizzled, cranky, hates the product that he's watching, and stroke-affected Jerry Lawler struggling through words and sentences, calling a match. I'd rather listen to Ian Riccoboni. That's just a joke. Stop it, Hawkins.
It's just, it's like listening to King struggle through a match. Insofar as there was any joy in the Jerry Lawler calls, it was that he was somewhat quick-witted, and it would not be fair of me to expect him to be quick-witted in these calls.
Jerry Lawler's here to call Anna Jay versus Harley Cameron.
Oh.
And we wait for him to try and get out a joke, a sexist seventh grade joke or something.
You know what would be really weird is you watch that match on like 1.25 speed. And the commentary is at normal pace, but the match itself is happening at 1.25 speed.
Injuries and cuts and call-ups. Asuka injured, appears to be legitimate. She was taken out of the Queen of the Ring tournament and put in there for Dakota Kai. JC Jane had surgery for her broken nose. We saw her bleeding all over the place on NXT a week or so ago. Included in those last set of NXT / WWE cuts, Boa as well, the giant talent from China that they had signed. So it looks like their entire foreign entry into NXT has been cut for right now. But in good news, someone I support very heavily, I think Chris likes her too, but Alicia Taylor has been officially called up to become the second ring announcer on the main roster, while Mike Rowe will be returning to NXT. I dig Alicia Taylor. I thought her and Vic Joseph's wife who got cut, I thought they had a eminently watchable social media show that they did. She has great personality. She was tried out a little bit on NXT UK as a backstage reporter for a while, but she's a very, very good ring announcer at the same time. And of course, if you watched Backlash as well, Tonga Loa is now, of course, part of this Bloodline faction. So the Gorillas of Destiny reunited with one another. Any comments on any of those, Chris?
We'll see if the Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa thing really makes the matches better here. In short order, I have my doubts.
Oh, Tonga Loa had a very interesting debut. I don't know if you probably did not get to see the social media around this, but apparently it was so loud in France. And this will take us into the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, where we had time to see this week, we'll talk about here. Tonga Loa could not hear the referee counting above him, so he was about a half a second late on pulling the referee out. So the referee kind of shoved himself out of the ring on that one, and the camera saved it by not showing that part of it. He appeared right there, like right in that moment. But this Backlash show, I loved it.
It was electric.
That crowd, that was another one like Puerto Rico's Backlash last year, where that crowd was so hungry for product that they elevated things that weren't past. I wouldn't say anything was bad on the show. The Jade, Bianca, and Kabuki Warriors match sort of fell apart a little bit, but they got it back eventually. But everything other than that was good, and it was elevated to better by that crowd. I loved the opener. The Owens, Randy Orton versus Solo and what's the other?
Tama Tonga.
Thank you.
Oh yeah.
And making that a street fight and a walk and brawl.
Yep.
Which is Kevin Owens and Randy Orton's specialty. And old man Orton getting on top of the barrier and then deciding not to do a move. I mean, if that didn't pop you, I don't know what it was. The three-way for the women I thought was a lot of fun too. Bayley just being a ring general. Tiffany Stratton looked great in that. Naomi held her own in that too.
Totally.
What else was on this card besides that? And the tag team match again, you know, look, that was a Jade Cargill showcase. That was fine. AJ.
I have my doubts about Cargill and Bianca having good chemistry as a tag team.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it just it doesn't feel like it's there. And hopefully people can work with them to kind of help them work on some teamwork and things to make them
feel more like
a team. I mean, you could dress like a team. That's neat, but they don't move like a team. They don't actually seem to really have team chemistry right now.
Not yet, but to me, and I'm going to make this because I'm watching a little bit of 89 Crockett right now, just to wash the taste out of my mouth of certain things. They have that weird chemistry kind of, it's off-putting for right now. But that Sid Vicious and Dan Spivey had when they were first trying to get the skyscrapers together, and they eventually found it as a tag team. But it's like you got these two lumbering guys who aren't doing tag moves. They're both big dudes who are just beating up people, but they both are the same guy in some ways. That's a little bit what Bianca and Jade are here, although Jade has far more wrestling acumen than Bianca has far more wrestling acumen than Jade right now. Jade is a little bit more of a presence, I think, in terms of everybody's watching and waiting. She's the Yakuza leader in The Simpsons. Everybody's just kind of waiting for her to do something cool. And I don't know if we're going to get there necessarily, but I think... See, to me, this is going to be like a problem. Like, if I was going to take an AEW storyline and make it like this, it's a lot like we put the Undisputed Kingdom together and we're already booking how we're going to break them up. And it feels like there's a lot of people who are looking at, all right, how's Jade and Bianca going to get broken up here, as opposed to giving them like a Road Warrior skyscraper / tag team run of sorts.
Right, or actually having Jade and Bianca be like just long-term friends, kind of like Kofi and Xavier, like they can lose the belts and still be friends.
Yeah, but I expect Jade Cargill to possibly win this Queen of the Ring. Be interesting to see what the fans in Jeddah have to say about that.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Damian Priest and Jey Uso. Boy, I thought that was a fun WWE style match.
Yes, totally.
That's all you can really say about it too. I mean the crowd was really into Jay to the point where I'm like, do they dare put this title on him and have the roof blow off the dump?
I mean, it wouldn't have been an unsalvageable narrative because the storyline here is that Damian Priest is having friction with the Judgment Day, and you could just kind of call an audible there and put the belt on Jey Uso, having the Judgment Day cost him the title.
Just there are times though that they do things in these matches when they're trying to do a narrative that drive, like Damian Priest looking at JD McDonagh go, what are you doing here? What do you think he's doing there? You think he's having a hot dog and a drink to watch the show? And then...
It kind of drives me crazy when there's not a commensurate reaction, which is something we'll talk a lot about on, like, Dynamite here this week. But, like, I mean, at a certain point, Damian Priest has to look at these guys and go, like, why do you show up when I explicitly ask you not to show up?
Right.
Why do you keep doing it? And, like... One times happenstance, like two times a coincidence and three times the trend or what, I forget what how that phrase goes, but like at this point, Damian Priest should be very skeptical of both Balor and JD McDonagh.
But at the same time, and it's weird because they only kind of gloss over this a little bit, JD saved the title for Damian Priest by putting his foot on the rope.
Yeah.
So it's like one of those things where it's like, are they going to have him get mad at him after actually doing what they came down there to do? That, oh, don't do that. You know, at least acknowledge that they've been useful occasionally. I mean, they did the apology thing on Raw and that was fine. But I really, really, really liked Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles. And they did.
Yeah.
What we both thought they were going to do is they're going to try and do their little follow this shot across the bow at the AEW work rate New Japan types by, you know, I mean, that top rope Cody cutter was something. And AJ was game. This this is a lot like what I think Christian and Swerve is going to be in some respect. It's a title match where you know the ending already, but you hope it's really, really good. And of course, the crowd again singing the "He's Phenomenal" song the entire time. This on this match, they kind of got to that point where they were becoming the show versus being part of the show, but they didn't quite cross over that line. But I enjoyed this match a lot more than I thought I was going to.
I had the same reaction. I just thought that, yeah, sure, it gets to the end where it goes into the WWE trope of near fall after near fall, but like, man, it felt like they just kept having a new high spot to go to that was escalating and raising the ante each time. And they have great chemistry with one another. We're starting to tell a longer-term story about Cody's nagging injuries that may be coming into play here, that shoulder injury. I thought this is just a really great piece of business. And the crowd elevated AJ Styles to feel like a big deal challenger.
There's something that they're doing with Cody that I'm a little hesitant about, and it goes into my dislike of Strong Style in some ways. The kick out at one for the burning hammer, and then Cody's doing a Hulk up now. And I don't know if I want that in a babyface champion anymore after living through the Hogan years. I don't want Cody Rhodes to become Hulk Hogan. That's all I'm saying, Chris.
Yeah, I feel you on that. And even I want the Dusty tribute spots to be a little less on the nose.
Yes.
If that makes sense. Like, I want to just hit a bionic elbow off of an Irish whip, not like the
flip flop and fly.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't. It's weird because I always attribute that. I mean, they had a little bit of that in Crockett, but that's mostly a polka dot Dusty thing in WWE for my fam. Because I mean, there was always a little bit of goofiness in Crockett when Dusty did the elbow, but the elbow was always a threat. You know, you watch the match with, I think it was the television title match, or no, it was the first blood match with Tully. And Tully's going to rush in there, and Dusty just, like, holds up his elbow, and Tully just stops because he doesn't want to end up bleeding if he gets hit with the elbow type of a thing. They gave reasons for kind of the goofiness, but then Dusty would, you know, start dancing around, hold up the elbow when Tully was going after him. But it always had an underlying of a threat type thing. The flip-flop and fly is just goofy sports entertainment.
It's like Three Stooges antics.
Yes, it is. It is your turn on the Lazy River. Where would you like to go first? Would you like to start with your rant?
Yeah, okay. Let's do it. So, one of the main angles right now on AEW television is predicated upon the terrible misfortunes that are befalling one Mr. Tony Khan.
Yes.
And this week's episode of Dynamite was no exception. It began with our two young bucks, Matthew and Nicholas, pulling into a parking spot that was not theirs. That was, in fact, one Mr. Tony Khan's parking spot. And we zoom into the placard, and there's an emotional reaction that ensues. And my question is, what is that emotional reaction? For me, that was gaping apathy, because this whole angle of, oh, these horrible things are happening to Tony Khan is really predicated on having an already well-established, years-long since the founding of the brand, warm relationship with Tony Khan. I would never have advised this, but this would have required Tony Khan to be a regular character on the TV show, setting things right, being the force of justice and being likable and fun and being good at speaking and not doing everything kind of like this for like 2 years prior. There's a number of different things that he would need to have done differently. I wouldn't have advised him to attempt any of these things, but these would have been requisite for us to have a hearty heart, we love our Tony Khan sort of relationship with him. Let me see. Oh, there we go. There we go. We don't have that hearty heart relationship with our boy Tony Khan. And so when the Young Bucks are besmirching Tony Khan, when they're threatening to take over AEW, why do I care? It's not as though Khan's articulated a vision of how this could be great. It's not as though the Bucks have articulated a vision I don't want.
Yes. Chris, I have some follow-up questions to your statement, and they're questions I already know the answer to, and you will already know the answer to. At any point on AEW television, was it mentioned that Tony Khan had suspended Jungle Boy? In terms of in-story kayfabe, whatever, that he would no longer be on TV for a while?
No.
Okay, thank you. Have the Young Bucks, in their management since getting rid of Tony Khan, done anything? Have they cut salaries? Have they made people come into work when they didn't want to come into work? Other than giving Christian a title shot as a swerve for the Kenny Omega sighting last week, have they in any way mismanaged AEW in any way, shape, or form?
No, and this really should be a lot like the initial weeks of the NWO, where they would like interrupt all of the matches, and like the Bucks' overbearing and obnoxious presence should be felt over everything, because they are doing a coup d'etat angle as the executive vice presidents. So, like, this should be constant. It should be more than just them making little snide phone calls to, like, Tony Schiavone or Renee Young and being like, do better, or whatever they say.
And just to put the icing on this proverbial cake here, if you're going to choose four people to stand up for AEW and stand up for Tony Khan, would you rather have people who have been there since day one, or four guys who were all acquisitions in some way, and two of whom, in at least this in this imaginary world, don't like Kenny Omega in Kingston and Danielson? Everything about this just screams it was time to do an Anarchy in the Arena. And we need some sacrificial lambs. Let's do it. Like, I know it tips the hand if they pick Mark Briscoe instead of Brian Danielson, but they should have been pushing Mark Briscoe to the moon through all the goodwill after the death of Jay Briscoe. If you're going to have a big knockdown brawl, is Brian Danielson the guy that you're enlisting? Or do you want somebody a little crazier to take on, like, the big-ass Kazuchika Okada type? This feels like when WCW used to go, well, it's time for War Games. Or when WWE does, well, it's time for Hell in the Cell. Well, it's time for Anarchy in the Arena. We just need to do it. And we'll figure out logic and stuff later, maybe.
Yeah, I just, this angle is very, very flawed, this fighting for the soul of AEW. And though it is time for Anarchy in the Arena, I don't think it's over after this, because I think this Okada faction has to continue for some time afterwards. And they're going to win. Like, they're going to win and gain control. Like
that. Yes, because eventually we're going to have a blood and guts between the real team AEW and the Elite to save AEW for some reason in a double cage. This is just a setup thing. You're exactly right.
Yeah, this is chapter one. The Empire wins. Then the Bucks get control of everything.
We're only in the first inning of this story, Chris.
Man, and I'm telling you what, you're hearing it more and more. Finish the story.
Finish the story.
Louder and louder each week it gets.
Well, Chris, I am going to let you pick my poison, because I have three rants in me of various sizes. Do we want Orange Cassidy? Do we want Swerve? Or do we want Serena Deeb?
Let's do Orange Cassidy, because I am finding Don Callis' presence on this show to be unwelcome annoying, and I want to hear what you got to say about Orange Cassidy.
So we have a big blood feud match after. Oh, and I forgot to report during the news. Chuck Taylor made that retirement thing. According to some, it's legit. He's done with wrestling, and that was his sign off. The big collision parking lot brawl where Trent broke his ankle in a few different pieces, quote unquote. I agree. Don Callis is not a manager; he's a broadcaster. But then he's brought out as a manager, and he never manages his guys. But nevertheless, Chris, we have this heated feud that we've been doing for a couple weeks for some reason, and not really building it to a big blow-off type style match. Orange Cassidy, Trent tries to take off a turnbuckle pad. He gets caught. Orange Cassidy takes off a turnbuckle pad of his own, Toru Yano style. Rams Trent's head in the exposed turnbuckle, pins him 1-2-3. Kind of a heel move. But Trent isn't selling the turnbuckle hit either, 20 seconds or even 5 seconds after he's pinned. It's just, nope, now we gotta get to the heat angle. And so Trent attacks Orange Cassidy. And Chris, he gives him a pile driver on the stairs. Now, maybe I was watching the wrong show here, Chris, and you can explain this to me. Has Orange Cassidy ever been training with the Blackpool Combat Club?
No, he does not know the forbidden neck tuck.
The forbidden neck tuck. Okay, cool. Was he stretchered out in any ways? Did any medical personnel come to check on him after this?
Well, someone did come to check on him a little bit later. Rocky Romero, who...
Well, but this was later. This was later, and he goes, oh, later. My neck's a little sore. Doing the Al Cervic, oh, my arm thing in the doctor's office. But no, we didn't. He wasn't thoroughly sussed at that point. So Trent then takes him underneath the ring and slingshots him his throat across a metal bar. Shades of Jake Roberts and Ricky Steamboat in some ways. Now, Chris, maybe I was watching a different show in some ways. Was this enough? Was Orange Cassidy knocked out by this? Was there any concern for Orange Cassidy's health at this point?
Why I really want to cut back to backstage here with that interaction with Rocky Romero and Orange Cassidy.
Let me finish with the punchline. No, because right afterwards he's scrambling quickly for a chair to grab him, showing no signs that any of these moves mattered in any way. And then Don Callis goes, no, we need to stop all this. And I was thinking the same thing, because I'm sitting there going, if the moves don't matter and you're doing all this for heat for Trent Beretta, and then Orange Cassidy isn't hurt by anything, if the path you took led to this, of what use was the path, saith Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men. This was garbage to an old school fan like me. And I just like bangers and heat segment types. We're justifying this as entertainment. And give me your Rocky Romero thing on this one, where that was like, hey.
So he goes backstage, right? We have Orange Cassidy. He's icing himself down. He has taken a number of shots to his neck and throat area. He is not speaking with any degree of impairment to that. He's just holding a little bit of ice on the back of his neck here.
Yes.
And then Rocky Romero comes in and proposes having a tag match, and proposes even getting Trent back into the tag team, which, to your point, oh no, none of the moves mattered. But like, that one sentence really did the job of making nothing that just happened actually matter. Because apparently Rocky just watched all of that shit.
We can still work out this relationship in some ways. The sex was too good. She has a great personality. Maybe she'll take me back. And even better, Orange Cassidy does not stand up and start choking the life out of Rocky Romero for suggesting this thing.
He's just like, what are you thinking? But like in the way that I said it on the couch.
Yeah. Hey, Orange, you know what? I think after all that, I think he's still redeemable.
We need a third guy. What do you think about Trent Beretta?
You know, Chuck's injured, but we used to have really good bangers with Trent. What in the hell?
You know, I know you guys aren't getting along, but you guys certainly have chemistry.
Oh, God. Every bit of... And this... The first part of the angle already had taken me out of this show in so many ways. But your turn. If you want to go to either of my choices, I can help supplement.
I'm sure you got a couple more rants, so I don't want to step on them here.
No, you're good. But please, go to your next thing.
Okay. What else do we have here? The Bang Bang Gang Bullet Club stuff, nothing shows more clearly the problem of how many belts this freaking company has than Jay White walking around with a bunch of belts, none of which I can identify.
Yeah, and walking past Pac, who's in a catatonic state. Looks like he's just standing there like a statue. Sulking over previous losses. Well, people just walk by him and go, well, emo Pock. It's like, what is he doing? At least give him a reason or give him something. Give him a prop. Give him something. He's just standing in the hallway, hair in his face, just breathing. Oh, just happened to be walking by. You suck. Let's do something with Death Triangle.
Remember when you guys were still together? Are you guys still together? Well, you suck. Like, great piece of business right there. Remember when Jay White was one of these big deal signings?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, that's what I worry about for Ospreay is that he is cruising on the Jay White highway.
All right, before I go back to things that I didn't like, let me quick hits on things I loved on this show, because there are a couple of them. I thought that Joe vignette, pretty damn good. Loved it. Would have loved it like the week after his title win. But other than that, I thought the Willow Nightingale promo was pretty good. And I'm gonna say this. Aleister Black finally has a mission statement instead of doing weird, goofy, dark crap, and he's saying Edge or Adam Copeland's not the guy you think he is. I'm cool with this. I was cool with all the taped bits they were doing for the most part, other than Mercedes Moné, who is just garbage. So let me get back. Oh, and I liked Harley Cameron versus Mariah May, because I thought Harley Cameron over-delivered what I was told she was. She's the type of person who use her legs as a weapon. I'm here for this. She has flexibility. Yeah, she's fine.
She's perfectly fine. I'm not saying push to the moon or anything, but no. Like in the middle of the pack as someone to get some wins and eat more losses, I think she's good.
For the hot girls graps hashtag Mariah May, my AEW hardcore division, I'm here for this. Now, let me get to the story of Serena Deeb. Because this is one that I am angry at, because this is all AEW's doing. Serena Deeb has never strongly been pushed as a babyface on this show or on any show. She has always been the heel Dean Malenko type, the professor, if you will, including the vignettes about her return, and she had been in this dojo, whatever, training, blah, 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 and they're going to remember my name, etc. With one exception, Chris, and that was last week's thing against Mariah May, where she's doing crowd work and she's clapping and she's the babyface. Here's the problem. Toni Storm is a babyface of this crowd. Mariah May is a babyface in this crowd. Why? Because Mariah May is hot and she teases making out with gorgeous Japanese women, and you know, Toni Storm has some overt sexual overtones with Mariah May, and the fellas are eating this up, and they're not booing Toni Storm in any way. So what do we do to decide to rectify this? Do we do vignettes? Do we do pre-tapes? Do we do anything of that nature to put this over, to help protect Serena Deeb, much like we didn't protect Deonna Purrazzo? No, we bring her out to do a live promo in front of an audience that doesn't like women's wrestling. So she comes out and she's telling the emotional story of these seizures she had been having to the chants of "Let's go Oilers, nice job." And she gets the main event swear word, telling Tony to give an S. And what do we do as a response to this? We send out Tony Storm in full-on cartoon gimmick saying, "I don't care about this emotional story and comeback," to the cheers of this crowd. Just.
Because she delivers the line in like a comedic way.
Yes.
It's not dickish. It's funny.
Yes. It's not getting heat in any way. It's, "I don't give a S about your
Quite frankly, my dear Serena, I don't give a damn.
Oh, you it's like having someone. I don't want to cheapen anybody's conditions or anything, but it's one of those things where it's like, I'm telling this heartfelt story about how I struggled to come back to wrestling, and wrestling is what I love, and Cartoon Jones over here, but I digress, comes out and goes, "Well, your story sucks and I don't care." Da-da-da-da-da-da. And you're just like, what the hell did I just watch here? What is this, laughing? Is this a sketch comedy show? Screw off, AEW, with this crap. Either turn them full babyface so that people can act against them, but they're just playing both sides against the middle with this character, and it's killing anybody you put up against her. This is the Becky Lynch issue.
Well, this is WWE. Like the NWO issue too, right? You have the cool heel. You have the cool heel.
Cool heel. Yeah.
Yep. No one can go against it. Like, you can't put a heel against it. I mean, you should put a heel against it, but then they're not committal about turning her, and they still give her all the accoutrements of being a heel, from Luther the Butler heavy to Mariah May. And like,
One's going to boo an attractive woman making sex jokes.
No.
Which is all Tony's gimmick is, for the most
especially
part.
In like glamorous, glamorous sort of like costuming.
Yeah, and they even tried to do the Mira Shirakawa, whatever her name is, and Mariah May kiss spot, and they said no. Well, that wasn't exactly a heel spot, because everybody loves that girl, and they drink champagne and they dance. It's just like everything about these beats are wrong, and it's gonna kill Serena in this feud too, because nobody expects her now to win, even though she's promised, quote unquote, but nobody also wants her to win. So,
right.
So
that's men are just looking at this as a cock tease now. Like, they're not looking at it as a they're really denying us this. Like, you know, eventually she's gonna kiss the other one.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like they have to. It's Chekhov's kiss.
Your turn, sir.
Man, what else was on this show here? I agree with you on the Edge storyline. I just have to say, the rest of the first hour in particular, Dynamite, like the first 60 minutes of that broadcast, just when you cut out commercials, draggy hour. One of the draggiest hours Dynamite I can remember.
The Cope Open is dragging this show a little bit, but I appreciate what Copeland's doing. He's out there having his fantasy camp of bangers. He's trying to be the next Sting, Terry Funk for this company. And he's going out there and killing himself for matches that are going on about 10 minutes too long to give the other guys something. But I appreciate what he's doing here. Don't get me wrong. Let's finish up anything on Dynamite. And I think our two major choices here are Chris Jericho or the swerve angle, and
let's do the swerve angle,
which is your world title program, but is being, you know, swallowed up whole by this Elite story. But this entire Dynamite, it was heel beat down, heel beat down, heel beat down. It was a WWE 2019 show, even up to Mercedes Moné doing a god awful promo. But yes. So we have not yet really established a personal connection between Christian and Swerve, where we have bought into the fact that Christian has been building himself back in to be a guy who deserves a title shot and into it. We even haven't necessarily played heavy into the fact of the Bucks, but they are a problem in this angle, not a solution. But so Swerve,
or big money Christian. Christian's never been big money.
No, he has not. So we bring out Christian and we bring out Swerve on his own doing the, as you put it, the MJF, I'm your scumbag kind of thing. And Christian's in there and he's getting ready to threaten, you know, having Nick Wayne and Killswitch go after Swerve, and Swerve goes, I brought backup too. And a lot of people were thinking Keith Lee, which I think it's going to eventually be. But instead, you know, look, we made the logical choice, A to B. We brought out the Mogul Embassy without Nana, because Nana was put out last week. And so Swerve is talking. Eventually, for some reason, the Mogul Embassy decides to jump Swerve out of the blue when they had been coexisting fairly well together throughout. Okay. And then we decide, Christian's kind of confused and scared by all this until he eventually joins in. But we go through that, and then it turns out all of this was orchestrated by the Bucks. So this is a two-person relationship scene, if I was going to be an acting teacher here slash improv teacher, and I know that drives people nuts. I don't care, because this goes to my strengths here. But the whole point of this is you need to have a one-on-one relationship here. And we have now introduced the Bucks and the Mogul Embassy and all these other tertiary characters that we need to get in on this to have some sort of emotional connection to this story in any way, when we have 2 weeks until this pay-per-view and we should be concentrating on Christian talking his way into believing that he can beat Swerve Strickland. And instead we're setting up aftermaths of things, because that's what I think this was, oh, well, he can go after the, well, it's going to be one of two things. Either he's going to go after the Mogul Embassy after this match, etc. Or we're probably getting some dumb thing like they did with the last Swerve program, where Swerve and Christian are a tag team against the Gates of Agony, which would be dreadful Stamford stuff. And I have no interest in that whatsoever. But you and I were talking about this before. You had a much better take on the angle on this, so I'm going to let you talk about it.
Okay, so what was my better take on the angle?
That there was no emotional...
yes. Okay, it wasn't earned, right?
It wasn't earned, yes.
Yeah, like we have not seen real cracks or fissures between the Mogul Embassy and Swerve in any meaningful way. And while on some level, you as a trained wrestling fan can see that eventually this stable of heels has to turn on their now becoming babyface leader, or they would have to turn with them, and you look at like the Gates of Agony, they're not a babyface team. So eventually something has to give here. And the question is, like, how is that going to shake out? Doing that leading into this was bad timing. You now introduce the Bucks into this storyline, which I think is a mess. I have exactly, like, maybe one clean out for this. I'll give that in a second. But I also thought it was completely unnecessary, because have the Mogul Embassy actually have Swerve's back right now. If anything, them standing behind Swerve a couple of times makes when they stab him in the back eventually that much better. Rather than, if anything, the crowd is ahead of the story. They know that the stable of heels has to turn on the babyface champion. So have the heel stable actually surprise the crowd for a while by being loyal.
Buy into the bit for a while, let it go, and don't make, because what they're really doing is making the story about Nana.
Yeah. And was Nana in on it?
Yes. And I'm just like, no, that's not the...
No. No. And then the other focus here now is also on the Bucks, as you said. And I think it's taking away from Christian as the credible contender here. And there really only seems to be one out eventually here, which is that the Bucks, after Christian loses, they set the table for Okada to beat Swerve, and they screw Swerve. And like one of their coup d'etats following winning Anarchy in the Arena is that they get the belt off of Swerve and they abbreviate his title reign to like 3 or 4 months. It's increasingly like they're writing themselves into a real corner on this.
Yeah. All right, let's cleanse our palate because I'm going to go to Raw.
Even enjoyable it's show.
Very watchable. The King of the Ring. Sheamus versus Gunther, banger. Ricochet versus Ilya, big time
banger. Oh, man. What a treat that was.
Lyra Valkyria and Dakota Kai, not bad. Especially Lyra taking that stomp, that almost curb stomp move that Dakota does because she can jump so high and get her legs up so high. Banger. Natty versus Io Sky. Banger, I
legit.
Thought. I mean, for the first time working with each other, that was a very good match.
Yeah.
Uso and Finn Balor, not insulting to my intelligence or anything like that.
Nope.
Perfectly cromulent WWE match. And then Ivy Nile and Zoe Stark was okay, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't stink up the room. And you know what? There was some forwarding of certain angles too. I dare I say that Liv Morgan has found her groove in this angle, because she is not getting eaten alive by Becky on promos. They're doing a lot of cool little subtle stuff. And they're setting stuff up in there that for people who are paying attention is really good. Like, I'll give you an example, and this was done by photography, but throughout the show, Dom started with his bandana and then he took it off. And eventually in a picture you can see of Liv, little corner of that bandana is peeking out of her pocket. When she and Dom decide that Liv is taking everything away from Rhea, they are going to be monster heels in this thing. And I am kind of looking forward to it. But yes, I mean, and McAfee had a good night. Let's put it that way. McAfee was... Boy, that Sheamus Gunther thing, though, man, that was my wheelhouse, man. That was two big dudes just beating the hell out of each other, and it made sense because Sheamus has been the guy coming in and saying, you know what, Drew, you're the one losing your edge, you're the one doing this. Yeah, I'm a little flabby right now, but I'll get back into shape. And then he gets put into this match against a guy who is on a heater of a run right now and just gets the crap beat out of him, where he's going to have to doubt himself. And he might even tease teaming with Drew, even if he doesn't go all the way with it. Ilya and Ricochet. This was a PWG match, man. This was phenomenal. And my response to it was, if Vince were still running this show, and thank God he's not, Ilya may get taken off TV because he bleeds in every match because he just goes so hardcore with those headbutts and things like that. But he looks like he is struggling at the end, and I love him, man.
He is my favorite. It's not like a shocking take, but he's like my favorite wrestler right now. And probably has been for the last couple of years. Just I love his work, man, and I – don't think they're doing this, but I will once again reiterate to the heavens, put this man on the Goldberg streak. Build the mystique around this guy because he absolutely can carry it. He's just this wild X factor of a guy who can always seemingly get the win. And that was really the thing about Goldberg that made Goldberg initially for that first like 75 wins is that he just was this X factor guy.
Here's the shame about this. Is that there's a Raw division and a SmackDown division, and that the King and Queen of the Ring in lovely Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, that the finals cannot be Gunther and Ilya Dragunov. They will have to be the Raw finals, and that'll be a TV match. And look, it'll be a great TV match. Don't get me wrong. But you put this on a pay-per-view where they can really, really go at it a little bit, and that Saudi Arabia crowd... Yeah. Might turn to democracy after that. I mean, it would be a sublime match on a pay-per-view.
It would be fascinating if a man from Germany and a man from Russia somehow brought democracy to Saudi Arabia.
Austria. But yeah, I mean, and Ricochet is, I mean, Ricochet is what Ricochet is. But that's what I'm also thinking during this match is like, look, he is sneaky enhancement talent, in terms of he is putting over phenomenal guys in terms of like the Jake Paul match.
Oh, and he sells his ass off in all of these.
And he sells, yeah. I mean, everybody wanted Ricochet versus Ospreay again, but you know only one of those guys will sell for a while, and that's Ricochet. But no, I that match, I watch and I go, Ilya got over in one night, I think. I think it's going to be impossible for him not to be over after this. Like everybody watched that, and the Nakamura match wasn't bad on TV, don't get me wrong, when he was still champ. But this one, and it was, you know, it was a back and forth 50-50, and I think we all knew who the winner was going to be, yeah, don't get me yeah. wrong, but this wasn't done properly, I think. And
right, yeah, no, this was the competitive 50-50, which made sense for it to be competitive. And then, you know, it's the post-matchy stuff. Like, the way Dragunov interacts with people at the end of the match has kind of a unique energy to it.
He is dead by the end of the match. Like you watch him, and he does his finisher, and he doesn't hook the leg or anything. He dies on top of his competitor.
He smothers him.
That's a little thing that I absolutely love. It's like, I have this great conditioning, but I am absolutely spent after this match, and I gave you people everything I have. I love that kid. I do.
Yeah.
Your turn, sir.
Man, what else happened on Raw of note / import? We covered the King and the Queen in the ring.
You can get NXT if you want.
Let's go to NXT here. Our girl Chelsea Green was the star of the week. And I thought that this match here in the main event, like, it was not an amazing classic, but I just,
no.
the one week of Chelsea Green as a babyface ish.
Yes.
A ton of fun.
I think
watching her modulate her performance to be more endearing and likable, modulating her selling a little bit to be more endearing and likable. She's just one hell of a performer.
Dakota Kai are your two most versatile people on this roster that you're never going to push to be championships. But number one, they're very good at what they do. And number two, both of them will take a beating to get the other person over. Like Chelsea Green just getting mauled by a Nia Jax or whatever. Dakota Kai getting mauled by everybody on that roster. Yeah, I loved Chelsea Green. And for me also, because as all of you know, I love unrepentant stupidity in my mid-card sometimes. Her and Ariana Grace... And this wasn't on the TV show. Like, the stuff that was on the TV show with them was good. But the aftermath of both Ariana Grace and Chelsea Green losing their matches and commiserating was some fantastic stuff where you're pretty. No, you're pretty too. Oh, this is so unfair. I watched this at least five times to look at other things that they were saying and stuff at each other and under the breath and underneath the crying and things. Chelsea Green is just such an asset to this roster. And I hope fans who just like quote unquote good wrestling, appreciate what both her and Dakota do, even though they lose all the time.
Yeah. To me, there's just so much more to being a good wrestler than just, I don't know, top rope, you know, like the Ricochet 630s or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Chelsea Green is a good wrestler. She's a good wrestler because she always makes sure that her performance is in service of the other person she's in the ring with, and she necessarily understands that her character is really contingent on who she's reacting off of, that yes. she needs strong. And so she's always giving and symbiotic. And in that sense, I think she's a tremendous asset. She is good at, you know, being a heel and the goofy selling too, the histrionic selling. She's got good selling.
She's a great flake slash stooge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have nothing else for NXT. If you have other notes, go into
no,
it.
No, if anything, the Ridge Holland stuff continues to bore.
We're deciding titles by a combine or people who are in a tournament. I'm just like,
right. Cares? And then the last legend in Trick Williams thing, we're really doing this with him. Like my hope is that this Lash thing is all a swerve. That is my hope. My hope is that the Noam Dar's strategy here to win the title is to have Lash betray him.
Yes. The Samson and Delia thing. I thought Noam was good in this. Like yes. being a little bit more serious and just, you know, because the metaphor is a goofball, you know, Legion of Substitute Heroes type of hodgepodge stable. But Noam Dar is very good, and Lash Legend is very good in it, and the other two are characters for the most part.
Yes.
Not to deny, or I'm like, Oro Mensah is fine. You know, he's still a bit of bootleg Kofi. But,
yeah, the line where Trick Williams goes, "I'm gonna smack you back to the motherland," probably didn't like didn't help Oro Mensah come off as more credible.
Those of us who are Caucasians just kind of going, you know.
Yeah.
But Noam, you know, getting a little bit of a serious rub here. I think Lash is basically implying pregnancy. And it will turn out to all be a fraud for the most part. And I'm hoping that.
That's what I'm hoping. Yeah, I know. I think some people want this to be straight, but I'm just like, you don't really want Lash and Trick as an item.
There's nothing to do after that other than, you know, because you could have done that with, on the main roster or in NXT between, Bianca and Montez Ford.
If anything, it's
nothing
it's
there.
It's more interesting to have her spurn him and then still have it be in the air that these two have a thing for each other.
Yes.
But it doesn't come back together.
There's a comic book Jeff coming in now.
Money in the Chase.
There was always a kind of that. Captain America had a member of the Serpent Society named Diamondback, who he had a fling with, but she was still a villain in many ways. But she was trying hard to reform, but she could never quite get there. You know, it's Batman and Catwoman type thing. You know, they still have a thing for each other, but she never quite. She can be an anti-hero, and maybe she can eventually be a hero, but not yet. She kind of still likes the life of crime type of thing, and I think that's a far more interesting choice.
Yeah. Outside of that, NXT was. Oh, last thing. The D'Angelo family.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. After weeks of debating what the hell is going on with the D'Angelo family, it appears to me that they are now full on heels, having kidnapped 2/3 of No Quarter Catch crew and throwing them in the trunk, hopefully not to get whacked the same way that they whacked Drew Gulak.
So let me get this straight. The mafia bosses that the No Quarter Catch crew hired to put a hit on their boss, who then wanted
for the good of the company, for the good of the company,
not
for the good of the company,
for the good of the company, have now been hoisted on their own petard, and they are the good guys in this story. Huh.
Well, is the mafia the good guys?
No. The mafia, we have now two heels in the story. But instead, we're trying to make one of them, we're trying to make Charlie Dempsey a sympathetic baby face. And I don't think that it's the time for that.
What is sort of implicit in all of this is it's predicated on Drew Gulak being a horrible guy.
Yes.
If you're going to buy, like essentially the No Quarter Catch crew, and that's how that initial promo was played out, which is that they were just like, dude, guys, just do this for honor. Like, you know, you basically they thought, like we all thought, Tony D'Angelo and his crew were faces, that they were like the fun-loving, they were essentially the mafia of Italian restaurants, like the Olive Garden mafia.
The Olive Garden mafia is great.
Yeah, like they just go in and they get the breadsticks.
They're the paisanos of...
and then like Tony's like, hey, Stax, you really put a hit on that meatball. And Stax is like, bada boom. Like, you know, we're going to put, you know, I don't know, whatever, more mafia jokes. But like now they are bad, and Charlie Dempsey is finding this out. But like the whole reason this storyline even makes any sense in the first place is you have to believe that when No Quarter Catch Crew asked the mafia to whack Drew Gulak in the trunk, that he was a bad guy.
Yes. And just this, and we're putting referees in freezers.
Nobody saw nothing.
Gabagool. Yeah. And then we're gonna turn two of them into Sopranos characters. You know, the goofball, inept. The story of the Sopranos is that they're an inept crew. I mean, can we get over that? And then one of them has mommy issues and needs to go to therapy. I know Joe Lanza loves the show because he's from Jersey, but really. They're a terrible mafia as well. That's what this is.
It's going to be Stax and Rizzo are going to be the incompetent ones, and yes, Luca's going to be the only one.
There's going to
be the only one.
There's gonna, what is it, Pine Barrens? What was the one where they went after the Russian hitman in there and it all went to crap? That they're going to have an episode like that where they're going to send them off, and you're going to see like Damian Kemp running through the woods. Like,
well, that's what they did with Ilya Dragunov. That's yes. Essentially the... The story of Ilya Dragunov is that he just like got out at a bridge and then had time alone with his thoughts and then beat Tony D'Angelo in the title match.
We're making a statement about joining crime and how mafia bad, but also mafia inept. It's dreadful. Let's end it there.
Yeah.
You can follow me on the aforementioned Twitter at CrapGame13, or you can just follow the show as we release episodes at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. You can follow Chris on the little social media he does on the gram, that is Instagram, at @DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We thank them for their patronage and allowing us to be on their network. But if you have more serious interests, plenty of shows on here, including the Gentleman's Wrestling podcast, The Flagship with Joe and Rich, Five Star Match Game with Joe Gagne, etc., etc. I am on another network as well called Fight Game Media. I do a show called The Dynamite Show where we nitpick that show 20 minutes after it goes. We go live on YouTube, and that drops in your audio feeds the next morning. Chris can't play music right now because he has crappy neighbors. But he might have other things to plug, so I'm going to inquire of it now.
Yeah, soon enough, hopefully, we'll have a resolution to that. But until then, if you want music lessons, I am still teaching those online. Hit me up on Instagram, as Jeff mentioned, DOCTOR_NOV. Dr. Nove is the name. Don't wear it out.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.